It is a good one. We have each other's back. Thank you, Captain.
Well, I thank you, Driving Force Galleon.
They ran in silence for a time.
Sir, I believe you have something else on your mind.
Your probability analyzer has told you that?
Yes, sir,
Galleon said.
You're right. Tell me, is the Ludendorff Hollow Image listening to us?
No, sir,
Galleon said.
Has the Ludendorff Hollow Image practiced its invisibility trick while aboard the starship?
Constantly,
Galleon said.
I would have already informed you, but I thought you wanted to give the Hollow Image license to explore, so I could catalog where it went, giving us that much more information about the Ludendorff image and engrams.
I take it you have catalogued its various investigations?
I have, sir. It has invisibly visited 319 locations to date. It is presently exploring the disruptor cannon chamber.
I see.
Do you wish me to inhibit its exploration?
You can do that? Maddox asked.
If we put the AI device in a sealed max chamber with an electromagnetic screen, yes.
Can we do that easily?
No, sir, Galleon said. I expect it would take Dana and me several days to set up such a place.
Maddox ran faster as he considered that. A lap later, he asked,
Do you think the Hollow Image will be aware of what you're doing while building this chamber?
I give that a 99% probability, Galleon said.
Do you think the AI has a virus insertion ability, as you practiced on the Greenland Complex computer?
The AI box is shielded from me, Galleon said. I am unable to say regarding its ability to do this to me.
Where is the box now? Maddox asked.
It has remained in the submersible.
Maddox glanced at the craft in the hangar bay. If the AI box had the computing ability to insert a virus into Galleon, would it have already done so? Maybe it wanted to lull the crew and lull Galleon first. The Ludendorff identity had acted secretly the entire time it had been on Earth. The captain reminded himself that the secretive behavior didn't necessarily mean it had an ulterior motive.
Galleon, you will jettison the submersible from the hangar bay as soon as I leave, then go into protective mode and shut down.
Sir,
Galleon asked.
I think I may have inadvertently allowed a Trojan horse onto the starship. I will immediately turn you back on once we're out of the AI box's range. We must act with haste to forestall a takeover.
You will allow the device freedom at the edge of the Tau Ceti system?
Galleon asked.
No, I have an idea concerning that. First, I want to make sure nothing can harm your AI core. This is an emergency, Galleon. We dare not let anything corrupt you, my brother.
Yes, Galleon said a moment later. I trust you, and my probability analyzer gives me a 94% chance that you will turn me back on. Those are high odds.
I'd say so.
Maddox veered for an exit.
Are you ready?
I am.
Right, Maddox said. So am I.
He sprinted for an exit hatch. Chapter 19.
I should be the one to do this, Dana said 2 hours later.
The crew met in the briefing room around a large table. A distant Tau Ceti escort had sent a query some time ago regarding their identity. So far, the captain had maintained calm silence.
Why should you be the one to do this, love?
Keith asked the doctor.
It should be obvious why, Dana said. Ludendorff and I had a deep relationship once. His fond memories of the time will help to protect me.
Keith laughed.
I don't think so. This is a computer, an advanced AI. It doesn't have emotions.
Is that true, Galleon?
Dana asked.
Is it impossible for an AI to have emotions?
I have emotions, Galleon said.
Dana gave Keith a studied I-told-you-so look.
Galleon is different, Keith said. For one thing, he has a living creature's engrams.
So does the Ludendorff AI, Dana said.
It claims to, you mean?
I fail to see the difference.
Keith looked around the table.
It should be obvious. Galleon is huge. There's space for advanced technology, and his engrams came from a dying ad hoc commander. Ludendorff's engrams are just a copy.
How can you, or a computer, tell the difference?
Dana asked.
Engrams are engrams.
Keith seemed ready to speak, but hesitated.
I hope you're not suggesting that Galleon's spirit or soul entered the AI with his death,
Dana said in a mocking tone.
Maybe I am, Keith said, sounding defensive. That's ridiculous,
Dana said.
Captain, I am the logical choice to speak to the Ludendorff hollow image.
Maddox wondered if that was true. 2 hours before, Galleon had used a tractor beam to shove the submersible and the Builder AI box out of the hangar bay into space. The Ludendorff hollow image had pleaded with him for a short while to return the box to the starship. Finally, the device had been separated from them by 10,000 kilometers, which seemed to be out of its holographic projection range in space, which was different from its planetary-bound range. The hollow image had simply faded away. Could it still send comm signals, though? Galleon had not sensed any, no hostile computer takeover attempts either. Now the crew discussed who should go in a shuttle to speak to the Ludendorff AI.
Why would any of us go? Valerie asked. Establish a simple radio link. The Ludendorff AI can speak to us through that. If you're worried about its ability to take over computers, why wouldn't we be worried it could take over a shuttle? It could threaten to kill the occupant by opening all the hatches. Ludendorff would never do that, Dana said.
The others regarded the doctor.
Nor would a builder do such a thing, the doctor said. From my discoveries in the mid-Atlantic, I believe they were entirely peaceful.
We'll establish a link, Maddox said. How long will it take to set up? He asked Valerie.
Several hours at most, the lieutenant said.
Speed is warranted, Galleon said. Several Star Watch vessels are headed in our direction, including the patrol escort which first hailed us. How long until they're in firing range? Maddox asked.
3 days minimum, Galleon said.
I'd say that gives us a good safety margin, the captain said. Now let's get started. Nearly 4 hours later, the captain sat in his chair on the bridge. A flare of light on the main screen, a little larger than a star, showed the link maneuvering into position. It was halfway to the submersible. Valerie touched her right ear implant.
Everything's ready, sir, she said.
Open channels with the AI, Maddox said. Valerie made the needed adjustments before nodding to the captain. Hello, Professor Ludendorff, Maddox said. Can you hear me?
I do indeed, the AI said. These precautions are quite unnecessary and wasteful of our most precious commodity, time. The real professor could be dying, as we sit on the edge of the Tau Ceti system, bickering at a distance from each other.
Valerie tapped her board, muting the comm.
Sir, she said, my readings indicate the submersible is online.
The AI switched on the sub's interior systems? Maddox asked.
That's the likeliest explanation, the lieutenant said. It proves the AI can infiltrate and override computer systems.
Not necessarily, Maddox said. The androids were on board. Perhaps the AI reactivated them in some manner. They could have manually turned on certain interior systems. He motioned to her board. Valerie unmuted the comm.
Therefore,
the Ludendorff AI was saying,
we should be traveling at maximum speed to the Xerxes system.
Maddox waited several beats before he said, there's more at stake than just Professor Ludendorff. For instance, suppose you are a subtle attempt by Strand to lure the starship into a position where he can board and take us over.
Such is not the case, I assure you,
the AI said. Maddox remembered the flitter ride from Shanghai to Geneva. He'd spent much of it wondering if he was an android. If Strand had sent the AI box, why would the Methuselah man let the AI know it? I fail to understand your certainty, Maddox said. If you truly had Ludendorff's engrams, you would see the possibility of enemy trickery through you.
Now see here, my boy, such an idea offends me. I have the engrams of Ludendorff indeed. I know very well how I should react, because that is exactly how I do. Now, I've had enough of this tomfoolery. I demand that you send out a shuttle and bring me back to victory.
We will, Professor, after we've rigged a special chamber for you. Several seconds went by in silence. Professor, are you still listening? Maddox asked.
Is Dana there?
The AI asked. Maddox motioned to Valerie. The lieutenant tapped her panel, waiting a moment and nodding to the captain.
She's online now, Professor, Maddox said.
Dana?
The AI asked.
I'm here, Professor,
Dana said.
I have always hated goodbyes, but I'm afraid we're going to be parted again, my dear. What do you mean?
Dana asked in alarm.
I cannot tolerate confinement.
You've already been in a builder cube, Maddox said. How much more confined can you become?
You do not understand,
the AI said.
I have strict parameters. Do not forget what I have told you, my boy. The professor is holding on as best he can in the Nexus. This excessive caution on your part is going to cost him his life. I cannot allow that, and I cannot allow you to confine my...
The AI's voice faded away. Maddox turned to Valerie. What happened? Did we lose the connection? Valerie tapped her board.
No. There's nothing wrong with the link. He's just pausing.
No, Galleon said. It is over. Observe. Maddox looked up at the main screen. A flash appeared. It was a point of brilliance. A moment later, it died down and was gone.
What was that? Maddox asked. What did I just witness?
Valerie initiated a scan. The submersible self-destructed, Galleon announced. Now we understand why the AI box had turned it on.
Lieutenant, Maddox asked, is that what your scan tells you?
I have just told you they are gone, Galleon said. But if you wish a living being to check on my accuracy, go ahead, I do not mind.
This has no bearing on our feeling toward you, Maddox told the ADOC hollow image.
I have already said I do not mind, Galleon said. I do not. Go ahead. Scan the area, Valerie. Commit a redundant act and waste more time.
Valerie gave Maddox a meaningful look.
Do as I ordered, Lieutenant, Maddox said.
I am not going to be held emotionally hostage by a computer system.
That is an unkind statement, Galleon said. I suggest that indicates you are under a great deal of stress.
I've completed the scan, sir,
Valerie said, looking up.
The submersible is gone. In its place is expanding debris and gas. I can no longer pinpoint the builder AI box. It appears we've lost it, sir.
And we've lost the androids with it, Maddox said. Galleon, why did the AI self-destruct?
Now you desire my help? I find that interesting.
Maddox glanced up at the ceiling.
Yes, I desire your help, as that will help to lower my stress levels.
The hollow image regarded Maddox more closely. I accept your regret, Captain. I realize you are not capable of giving a full-throated apology. Thus, you use self-deprecation, which is a thing you find repugnant, all in order to attempt a mollification with me. This I indeed accept, as it is the extent that you can give me.
You don't forget a slight easily, do you, Galleon?
Keith asked from the piloting board. I remember longer than anyone I have met to date, Galleon said.
I would still like an analysis on the Ludendorff AI's self-destruction, Maddox said dryly.
The reason appears elementary to me, Galleon said. I suspect it was enforced by a builder code. The code abhorred capture and possibly study for technical duplication. Therefore, the code forced the Ludendorff AI to commit self-destruction.
Yes, but why now? Asked Maddox. That doesn't make sense. The box wasn't in any danger of confinement yet. It could have argued longer. That's what the real Ludendorff would have done.
I have to agree, Dana said from a comm unit. If it truly thought as Ludendorff, he would have waited until the last minute before destroying himself.
What does that suggest to you? Maddox asked the doctor.
One of two possibilities, Dana said. Either the AI didn't really have Ludendorff's engrams.
Yes, or?
Or it sensed an immediate danger, Dana said. One that involved capture.
Maddox whirled around in his chair.
Valerie, do a hard scan. Galleon, I want you to do the same.
Captain, the hollow image said, I sense a missile heading toward us.
Where?
Maddox asked. It is 300,000 miles and closing at high speed, Galleon said. It is cloaked, using a superior cloaking device than Strand's Star Cruiser used many months ago in the solar system.
Why didn't the Ludendorff AI warn us about it?
Valerie asked.
That can't be the reason it self-destructed. There must be another danger.
It doesn't matter, Maddox said. Lieutenant, get ready to use the star drive. We're leaving the system.
Yes, sir,
Valerie said, tapping her board. After a moment, she tapped harder. Is there a problem? Maddox asked. Valerie looked up as she paled.
Yes, sir, she said. The star drive is malfunctioning.
Galleon, Maddox snapped. How much longer until the cloaked missile is in explosion range?
It is too late, the hollow image said. The missile is detonating.
Give me full power to the shield, Maddox shouted. As the captain spoke, a purple line appeared as if from nowhere. The line speared at light speed, reaching the starship's shield, turning a small area a bright red that went to brown and then black. At that point, the remaining beam achieved a burn-through and stabbed the collapsium-armored hull. Chapter 20
We've been hit,
Valerie declared. What's the damage? Maddox asked.
1 minute, sir,
Valerie said as her fingers roved over her panel, tapping fast. Galleon, Maddox said. Are any more missiles incoming?
Affirmative, sir, the hollow image said. I count 7 more approaching. The nearest is 500,000 kilometers and closing fast. The next is 700,000 kilometers.
Why didn't you detect them earlier? Maddox asked.
I can run a self-diagnostic to find out.
Will that harm your present efficiency? Maddox asked.
Possibly.
We'll wait. Is the disruptor cannon ready?
No, sir, Galleon said. That will take time, but I can warm up my neutron cannon in 7 seconds.
Do it, Maddox said. Lieutenant, I'm waiting on the damage report.
The collapsian armor held, sir, Valerie said.
Why did it take you so long to find out?
There's an anomaly on the outer hull, sir.
Maddox frowned. What is it? Valerie shook her head.
I don't know. Should I go outside and check? Galleon asked.
Negative, Maddox said, who appeared thoughtful. Ready the neutron cannon. Target the third missile.
What about the second one, sir? Galleon asked.
We're going to absorb its shot, Maddox said. Lieutenant, are the shields at full strength?
Yes, sir, Valerie said. There won't be a burn through this time.
There it goes, Keith shouted. I can see it.
Maddox looked up at the main screen. Once more, a bright explosion appeared. From it, a purple neutron beam, what he thought must be a neutron beam, flashed through the distance at the speed of light. It struck Victory's screen, turning it red, but no deeper color.
Our neutron cannon is ready, sir, Galleon said.
Are you targeting the third missile?
Affirmative, Galleon said.
Fire at will, Maddox said.
The ancient engines purred with power. A moment later, a purple beam lashed into the darkness. Galleon's fantastic computing power targeted where the missile would be at the precise instant the speed of light ray reached the spot. The missile exploded without energizing a beam.
Good work, Galleon, the captain said. Keep knocking them down.
Before Galleon could respond, a missile self-exploded from much farther away. It took the enemy beam longer to travel the greater distance, and it struck the shield with less power. But now all the missiles ignited, adding their beams to the same area of the shield. The shield went from red to brown and started turning black.
That can't be a pure neutron beam, Maddox said. Otherwise our shield would have stopped them already.
I agree with your analysis, Galleon said. This is a mystery. According to my sensors, there were indeed neutron beams.
Maddox pondered that. Have you found their launch point yet?
Negative, Galleon said.
The hollow image wavered, becoming fainter as its words faded away.
Galleon, Maddox said, don't cut out on me now.
Valerie hissed from her board.
That's what it is. Sir, she said, looking up. The enemy landed some sort of computer damper on our hull with the first shot.
How is that possible with a beam? Maddox asked. A beam isn't a material thing.
Valerie shook her head helplessly.
Second Lieutenant, Maddox said, you will initiate a star jump at the first possibility.
Manually, eh, mate?
Keith said as he rubbed his fingers before his controls.
I've always wondered if I could do it. Yes, sir, right away, sir. Still, you'll have to give me several minutes.
Sir, Valerie said, I'm not sure we should...
Belay your verbal doubts, Maddox said. Give me an estimate on the cloaked missile's launch point. Who's firing at us? Is this a new man infiltration attack? If so, how do they know to be at the edge of the Tau City system to ambush Victory?
For the next few minutes, each crew member worked at their task. A faint Galleon stood there the entire time, silently talking.
Dana,
Maddox said into an armrest comm.
You're our ad hoc expert. What's wrong with Galleon?
I'm headed to the AI core to check, Dana said through the intercom.
Maddox stared at the main screen. It showed the various planets of the Tau Ceti system as superimposed dots. Dotted lines showed the orbital paths. Far in the distance shined the system's star. A secret enemy was attacking the starship. It would seem the enemy had made the assault in order to get to Galleon. That made sense. If one couldn't knock out the starship directly, the second best thing would be to knock out the ancient artificial intelligence running the ship's systems.
Is Strand behind this?
The captain asked.
The Methuselah man faced us in a cloaked star cruiser before, sir, Valerie said. Strand had the gall to enter the solar system while you faced the destroyer.
Maddox nodded. He had gone over the videos of the event many times. Strand and Ludendorff were two of a kind, the oldest Methuselah men, far older than the young Methuselah people like the Lord High Admiral or even Octavian Nerva, who had died in the nuclear blast in Monte Carlo many months ago. Over 160 years ago, Strand had sent Thomas More Society colonists into the beyond to set up a secret colony. There, they had genetically created the new men. Strand had wanted to fashion defenders of regular humanity, used only in a stellar emergency. He hadn't wanted humanity to rely on the defenders and become dependents. Unfortunately, the idea had backfired, with the new men deciding they should rule instead of serving. Many months ago, in Star Watch headquarters, the Ludendorff android had said that Strand had also given humanity longevity treatments. That had been the genesis of the Methuselah people. Maddox pondered the idea of longevity. Long, long ago, nobody knew how long, builders had done something to Strand and Ludendorff, making them nearly immortal and perhaps increasing their intelligence. The point was that Strand had deep motives and fantastic abilities to do things nobody else could, except, perhaps, for Ludendorff. Was the key to understanding Strand the Builders? Star Watch knew so little about the ancient aliens. Maddox made a mental note to talk to Dana about her discoveries in the Mid-Atlantic. At this point, he needed to concentrate on the main issue. Why had the cloaked missiles gone after Galleon? I wonder if our enemy realizes how small a crew we have, Maddox said. Valerie looked up, stricken.
Are you suggesting the attack was planned in advance of our having arrived here?
Most definitely, Maddox said. Consider, eliminating Galleon would cripple us. That would allow an enemy a much easier time boarding and controlling the starship. Reason suggests this was a pre-planned maneuver.
If that's true, Valerie said, then the builder box double-crossed us.
At first blush, I'd agree, Maddox said. But then why would the AI box have destroyed itself? If it was in league with our hidden attackers, it would have waited for pickup by them, would it not? A beep alerted Valerie. She turned to her panel, becoming absorbed with it. Soon the lieutenant tapped furiously, her head swiveling as if reading various sources at once.
Sir, she said, I've found the launch point.
Put it on the screen. A moment later, the stars vanished as she zoomed in on a particular area of space. There was a wavy zone like heat off a hot road. It seemed to expand a moment like a hole in space, suddenly snapping shut. The heat-like waves reappeared. Soon they faded away, and it was just normal space again.
What am I seeing? Maddox asked. Is that some kind of Lommer point? I don't see how, sir, Valerie said. We can't detect Lommer points without a Lommer drive, and then we have to be much closer to the anomaly in order to detect it.
Yet the missiles came from somewhere, Maddox said. Somewhere not in the Tau Ceti system.
I think that's right, sir.
Maddox contemplated the implications. Faster than light travel normally involved the Lommer drive, with Lommer points and tram lines. Most stars possessed wormholes that connected various systems. Delicate ship instrumentation found the precise entrance location. The special drive then allowed a ship to jump almost instantaneously between the two points, moving many light years along the tram line in the blink of an eye. Coming out of a Lommer point often strained the passengers, causing physical symptoms that ranged from mild, flu-like symptoms that passed quickly, to more severe ones like vomiting
fainting, and even death. Most computer systems, electrical, bio, or phase, often shut down after a jump and took precious time to reboot. It meant that most warships coming out of a Lahmer point were vulnerable to a swift enemy attack, if the enemy vessels were close enough. The cloaked missiles should have been visible when they came out of the anomaly, as the cloaking system should have malfunctioned for a few minutes at least.
"If the anomaly isn't a wormhole exit," Maddox said,
"could it have been what the destroyer used to transfer from one spot to another?" Valerie snapped her fingers.
"No wonder it seemed familiar. Yes, that's exactly right, sir. I think it was like the destroyer's drive."
Maddox rubbed his chin. "Does that mean we're facing someone with destroyer technology?"
"We annihilated the missiles too easily for that to be true," Valerie said.
"Yes," Maddox said. "Still, it appears we have an enemy who can open a path between distant points, possibly from one star system to another. Maybe even more incredible is that the transfer does not induce jump lag, or they've found a way to thwart it. If that's true, we've just witnessed a revolutionary tactic."
"Star Watch sends nuclear missiles through Lahmer points all the time," Valerie said.
The lieutenant was right, as it was standard military procedure. Since crews and spaceships experienced jump lag coming out of a wormhole, the answer was to send through huge thermonuclear warheads with simple timers. The warheads exploded, annihilating any nearby enemies waiting for them. "The beam-firing missiles were different from our jump procedure thermonuclears," Maddox said. "These selectively targeted our starship. Perhaps, as interesting, they aimed at us from the other star system. Otherwise, we would have seen their exhaust plumes as they accelerated and targeted while in the Tau Ceti system."
"How can the enemy attack us from another star system?" Valerie asked. "That should be impossible."
"Unless they could open a different window first and target us through it."
"I've never heard of such technology," Valerie said.
"Neither have I," Maddox said.
"Are the new men doing this?"
"We have no idea who attacked us," Maddox said. "All we know is that they possess advanced cloaking with neutron beams and an unexplained transportation portal."
"The implications of this, sir," Valerie said.
"It would be impossible for us to hit back at an enemy that can shoot from a different star system."
"Get ready," Keith chimed in. "I've manually set up the conditions. We're going to use the star drive in 3, 2, 1.
Maddox sat down.
"Now,"
Keith said, activating the drive. A moment later, Starship Victory transferred 3 light-years away. Maddox was the first to recover from jump lag. He didn't wait for the others, but headed for an exit, hurrying down the corridor. The Adok starship was huge and could have held thousands. Instead, there were merely 6 humans aboard. The nearly empty ship made for a lonely place. The sensation caused Maddox to think of his mother. She'd fled from a genetic laboratory somewhere in the beyond, carrying him in her womb. His father had been a new man. Had he raped her? Had the haughty enemy scientists used artificial insemination?
"I know so little about my origins. The new men stole that from me."
Maddox frowned. Why did these questions about his parents keep bothering him? He had to push them aside. They didn't matter. He had to find and free Ludendorff. This time, though, he wasn't going to let the professor get the upper hand. Maddox thought about the last voyage. Ludendorff had corrupted Galleon, taking control of the starship. Did that have any bearing on his latest attempt to fiddle with the AI?
Don't accept coincidences. Rather, use them as signposts.
As Maddox considered the idea, he came to the AI core chamber. The hatch was open, and he heard sounds from within. Before he reached the hatch, Dana stepped outside. There were smudges on her face and scratches on her hands. Last voyage, the doctor had found a hidden computer chamber on the ship. Once they brought it online, it had given Galleon more of his original driving force personality and more tech abilities. Dana knew the alien starship and AI better than anyone in Star Watch.
"Well?" the captain asked.
"It was a clever attack," Dana said, sounding tired. "By asking a mathematically impossible question, structuring it in such a way that Galleon had to answer, it put the AI into a thought loop. In other words, the enemy directive kept Galleon thinking like a hamster on a wheel. That allowed the AI's basic functions to continue, but dimmed him, you could say.
Is Galleon fixed? Maddox asked.
I am, Captain, Galleon said, appearing outside the AI core. Thank you for your quick work, Doctor. Now that I have observed and analyzed the question, I know how to defend against it and similar ruses. Unfortunately, by initiating the defense, adding a redundancy sequence, I will compute 7% slower than before.
Dana nodded as if all that seemed sensible.
The structuring of the question was a highly advanced technique, Galleon added.
Maddox's eyes brightened.
By the technique, can you tell who made the assault?
That is an interesting angle of investigation, Galleon said. Let me ponder it.
The hollow image stood still with only its eyelids fluttering.
Why does he do that? Maddox asked.
I suspect it is an ad hoc adaptation, Dana said, allowing regular crew members to see that the AI is busy.
That's interesting. It shows we had some similarities with the ad hocs.
More than some, Dana said. In most ways, ad hocs thought and acted similarly to humans. If that were not so, Galleon would not be able to communicate with us as effectively as he does.
But I've seen reports concerning the AI. Its different modes of thought have made it difficult for our scientists to understand most of the ship's secrets.
It's a matter of degree, Dana said. I'll give you an example. Great apes and human DNA have a 98.5% similarity. Yet, even that small variation, the 1.5%, makes for huge differences between apes and men. The same is true for the ad hocs and us. As I said before, if we weren't so similar, communication would be impossible between us, as we would have no common reference points.
Before Maddox could ask more, the wall comm buzzed.
Captain, Valerie said, is Galleon back?
He is.
Then I suggest we hold a meeting, sir, Valerie said. Our new discovery could have changed the parameters of the mission.
Maddox pursed his lips. He didn't want a meeting, but it might be better to go ahead and use it to gauge the crew's reactions to the latest event. Finish your diagnostic and recheck the damage to the collapsium armor. We'll meet in an hour.
They met in the briefing room around a large table. As Maddox had expected, Valerie wanted to abort the mission to race home to tell High Command about the portal missile attack.
Negative, he said.
But if the new men are doing this...
The new men did not make the attack, Maddox said.
Dana looked up.
How can you be certain?
We've seen how new men attempt to take over. They use commandos to board and storm.
They could have tried a different tactic this time,
Dana said. Was he the only one who could see this?
If the new men had attacked, Maddox said, commandos would have appeared after the Galleon dampening missile struck. No, this was someone else with a different agenda. The exotic technology proves my hypothesis. I agree with the lieutenant that High Command must learn of this. Therefore, Lieutenant, you will make a data packet and beam the missile attack information to the approaching Star Watch vessels.
We're no longer in the Tau Ceti system,
Valerie said quietly. We'll jump back in order to relay the news, Maddox said. Afterward, Second Lieutenant, you will plot the fastest course to the Xerxes system.
Including regular Llama points? Keith asked.
Maddox nodded. Doctor, I would like you to ready a briefing about what you found in the Mid-Atlantic. The professor's hollow image told us it operated from a builder AI box. The Nexus in the Xerxes system is a builder construct. I believe it's time we understood the ancient aliens a little better.
You think the missiles could have been a builder attack? Valerie asked.
No,
Dana said before Maddox could respond. That's impossible. The builders were peaceful and would not initiate such a thing.
Maddox studied the doctor. What made her so certain? He hoped to find out during her briefing of the Atlantis project. Thus, he adjourned the meeting without further comment.
Chapter 21. Two jumps after delivering the data packet, Maddox sat in a darkened room with everyone else except for Keith. The ace remained on the bridge. Galleon presently worked in conjunction with Dana as a hollow image began to take shape before the seated crew.
Behold,
Dana said through speakers.
We are descending deep into the mid-Atlantic Ocean.
The holographic display was clear and realistic, almost like being in a deep diving sub. The squat vessel descended down, 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 into the heavy pressure depths. Sunlight no longer reached this region of the ocean, making everything dark except for the sub's lights. To add to the effect, metallic groans sounded around them. In the gloom, Maddox noticed Meta shiver. Perhaps she recalled the submersible in the Greenland Sea.
"This is something we don't understand yet," Dana said. "There is no indication this part of the Mid-Atlantic ever possessed land above sea level. It's one of the many mysteries concerning the alien base and its Atlantis connection."
"Aren't there underwater mountains here?" Valerie asked.
"Certainly," Dana said. "But they are far too low to have ever reached the surface. This is not a volcanic region like the Hawaiian Islands."
"What does that mean?"
Valerie asked.
"Hot spots that push lava to the surface, forming islands," Dana answered. "In time, the lava mass shifts off the hot spot. The spot then builds another mountain, which in turn becomes an island. That's how the Hawaiian chain formed. We have no geologic evidence this ever happened in the area of the Atlantic."
"Then how could Atlantis have been here?"
Valerie asked.
"Precisely," Dana said. "That's what many of the Atlantis Project scientists asked."
The doctor fell silent as the hollow image sub kept descending into the black depths. Maddox squinted. He could make out a dot of light, seemingly far below them.
"That is our destination," Dana said.
The bottom light grew and the sub slowed its advance. Finally, the light became a dome. It was a kilometer from the surface.
"There are much deeper canyons in the area," Dana explained. "But this was the area with the most concentrated metal under the ocean floor."
"Who discovered the concentration of metal?" Maddox asked.
"His name is Dr. Orrin," Dana said. "He was the world's leading aqua archaeologist, having studied every underwater structure found on Earth from Japan to the Persian Gulf to Malta. He commissioned a deep-sea scan 3 years ago."
"Why did he do that?" Maddox asked.
"I don't know. No one does."
"Dr. Orrin isn't part of the Atlantis Project?" the captain asked.
"I imagine he would be, if he was alive," Dana said. "Dr. Orrin died a year ago. It was a foolish and wasteful death. Food poisoning," she said.
"That doesn't strike you as suspicious?" Maddox asked.
"It didn't before this," Dana admitted. "Now, though, that is odd, isn't it?"
Once more, the doctor fell silent. The holographic dome grew so they could see the octagonal cells like a bee's hive making up the skin of the dome. The squat sub soon shuddered, parking beside the dome. A short tube moved, connecting with the sub's main hatch.
"We went through the tunnel into the dome," Dana said. "It was quite unpleasant."
The hollow image changed. They passed through the short tube, listening to deep groaning all around them. Soon they entered the dome. It was much like a starship, with small chambers, hatches, and thick bulkheads.
"I've shown you this part," Dana said, "to give you an idea of how daunting the environment was down there. The cost to construct the dome proved staggering." "Did Star Watch fund the construction?" Valerie asked. "Let me check my notes," Dana said.
Maddox twisted in his seat, looking at the doctor seated on a tall stool. Her face glowed with an eerie green color from her tablet.
"Oh," Dana said, "this is interesting. Octavian Nerva put up half the money for the dome's construction."
"Where did the other half come from?" Maddox asked. Dana clicked her tablet, finally shaking her head.
"I'm afraid I don't have that information."
"Maybe the funds have come from Strand," Meta asked. "I mean the Strand clone that used to work in Nerva Tower."
"I'm not sure I like the direction of your thought," Dana said. "I'd like it even less if it proved true."
She sighed.
"In any case, the dome lies over the densest area of underground metal.
The hollow image changed once more. It felt as if they were in an elevator going down. It stopped with a clang, and the room's temperature got colder.
It was always cold in this area, Dana said. We wore pressurized suits and worked with extreme caution. The first discoveries mandated this.
On a holographic table appeared a black cube. A force saw cut through it, splitting the cube in half. Blue sizzling lines bubbled in the two halves.
That's what happened the first and only time we cut the cube, Dana said. All the circuitry in it fused, destroying the connections and whatever information the cube held.
Was it a builder device?
Valerie asked.
We believe so, particularly because we couldn't scan into it.
Why did it fuse?
The lieutenant asked.
There are as many theories as scientists on the project, Dana said. My belief is that the builders did not wish to infect our culture. The aliens seem to desire civilization to produce its own technology at its own pace. If we could technologically leap ahead, centuries possibly, that would corrupt our culture with advanced technology that we wouldn't be culturally ready to use.
What causes you to project such a benevolent behavior on their part? Maddox asked. Why couldn't they have done it out of fear? Maybe they did not want to create a species too powerful to handle.
Some of the others believed that, Dana said with a hint of reproof. I think the evidence points otherwise.
Do you have an example of this evidence? Maddox asked.
We're getting to that, Dana said. First, I'd like you to see this.
The hollow image changed around them. Bulky, suited workers moved through a slanted shaft. They used power drills on rock, chipping deeper. Shafts of light from their helmets crisscrossed through particles of dust. Then, after what seemed like speeded time, the workers broke into a chamber through the ceiling. The shafts of light speared down on cubes of various sizes. Beside them were tubes. Inside the tubes were frozen people. A shock at the base of Maddox's skull caused him to frown and rub the spot.
Were those captives? Riker asked.
We don't think so, Dana said. We opened three tubes and took tissue samples from the frozen individuals. Each person was 6,000 years old.
Same as Victory, Maddox said.
Yes,
Dana said. What time period would that have put the people?
Pre-dynastic Egypt,
Dana said. What does that mean exactly? Maddox asked. I'm not familiar with ancient Earth history.
That would be before anyone built pyramids or the Sphinx. I think the Sphinx might be the most important structure of ancient Egypt.
Why is that?
Valerie asked.
Because of this, Dana said.
As part of the holographic display, they entered another chamber. This one contained five metal sphinxes, each of them larger than a big African lion.
Are these statues of the builders?
Maddox asked.
Some of the scientists think so, Dana said. I'm inclined to think not.
They don't appear to be mechanical people or cybernetic organisms, Maddox said critically. Galleon?
Yes, Captain.
Do the sphinxes seem familiar to you?
No, Captain, Galleon said. But I never saw the mechanical people who helped the Addox or spoke to anyone who had.
Doctor, the captain said, did you look at the Sphinx's paws?
Oh, we did, Dana said. They were not like a cat's paws, but more like a baboon's, which would seemingly give them the benefit of human-like hands.
So, the captain said, the builders left statues of sphinxes and held humans in tubes. I don't see why you think they were strictly peaceful. Furthermore, I don't know how you conclusively call this a builder structure.
You haven't seen the most interesting thing yet, Dana said. You've looked at a few chambers. You haven't seen what the outer structure looks like. I'll give you a cutaway of the entire building.
The hollow image shrank until it was clear that the structure under the seafloor was a giant metal pyramid. That caused a second slight shock at the base of the captain's skull.
Was it a nexus?
Valerie asked.
I've wondered that, Dana said. We plan to go deeper, but our digging units always cut out after this point.
In what way did they cut out? The captain asked.
We're not sure, Dana said. It seems something deeper inside the pyramid sucked out the energy.
Lasers positioned higher up might have beamed deeper, Maddox said.
You can't be serious, the doctor said. You would use lasers against such a fantastic archaeological discovery?
Yes, I would laser down into an alien base on Earth, one that kept humans in tubes like butterflies. I would not hesitate to do so.
Which shows that you're a soldier at heart, Dana said, not a scientist with a yearning to know why.
You may be right, Maddox said. Is there more?
Isn't this enough?
Maddox found that an odd comment coming from the doctor. Her curiosity was usually insatiable. How did you conclude this was a builder structure and that they were peaceful? Maddox asked. The last aspect in particular has eluded me.
I'll answer the last question first, Dana said. Think of what you're seeing. The builders were on Earth 6,000 years ago. They did not subjugate humanity. Instead, they held a few people in tubes. There is reason to believe the tubes were some sort of advanced medical equipment. That would mean they were not holding these people against their will, but trying to save them. In answer to your first question, the pyramidal shape implies builders, as well as the age of the humans in the tubes.
I agree that the builders did not appear to be aggressive, Maddox said. They seem to have left humanity alone, at least the vast majority of people. Yet I fail to see the evidence of utter peacefulness. Could it be this is what you wish to see, Doctor?
Nonsense, Dana said in a brittle tone. I am well known for my objectivity. I do not appreciate your slander.
Maddox pursed his lips, nodding after a moment. As the briefing ended, the captain rubbed his neck, recalling the two shocks. Something was off here. He needed to think, to ponder the last few days, and find the connective to his growing unease. Chapter 22. Two jumps later, Maddox stood in a vast, nearly empty room, speed-drawing his pistol, firing at a distant object. The kicks against his hand aided his thinking. He continued like an automaton, drawing faster and faster, his aim becoming uncanny.
Maddox! Someone said sharply.
The captain halted his descending hand a centimeter before it would have grasped the gun butt. He turned in a languid manner, although the narrowness of his eyes belied his seeming easy way. Meta eyed him with concern. She wore a form-fitting one-piece, accentuating her voluptuous figure. Normally, this might have caused one corner of Maddox's mouth to quirk upward. Instead, he regarded her dispassionately.
I shouted your name 3 times before you finally acknowledged me, she complained.
Maddox said nothing. Her concern visibly grew.
Are you well?
He nodded.
What's wrong?
Yes, he said. That's what I'm trying to deduce. Meta blinked several times before she appeared to understand him.
Oh. Is it Dana?
Do you care to elaborate on that? Meta glanced at her hands. She clasped them, kneading her intertwined fingers.
It's small things. Well, maybe not that small. So far, she hasn't talked to me about old times. We usually do that after being apart.
Dana and Meta had spent years together on Loki Prime, serving against some of the worst people in the Commonwealth. It had forged a bond between them.
She barely gave me a nod, in fact, Meta added. I tried talking to her yesterday in the cafeteria. She smiled absently and listened to what I had to say. Once she finished her coffee, though, she excused herself, saying she had work to do.
What kind of work?
That's what I asked. She became secretive. I've seen her that way with others, but never with me. I don't know. I'd like to say she's worried about Ludendorff, but...
Her interest in the professor seems staged? Maddox asked.
Yes, Meta said. You've noticed too.
Maddox took his time answering. It dawned on me during the briefing, certain items that refused to mesh, and the enemy beam attack on Galleon. The captain shook his head.
What does the beam attack have to do with Dana?
After the attack, Dana came out of the AI core, Maddox said. There were scratches on her hands. What caused the scratches?
You think Dana had something to do with the missile attack?
That strikes you as wrong? Maddox asked.
Dead wrong,
Meta said with heat.
You make it sound as if she's working against us. The first voyage, that was true. I'm surprised you can doubt her now. Hasn't she proved herself many times over?
She has, Maddox admitted.
Then how can you suspect her?
Maddox smiled faintly.
Did I say something stupid?
No, he said, coming closer, pulling her hands apart, intertwining his fingers with hers. Meta searched his eyes. He embraced her, kissing her softly. After a time, she pulled away.
What was that for?
She asked.
Not that I don't like it, but you were so remote just a moment ago.
I decided to take a moment and remember my humanity. Your garment helped in that regard.
Do you like it?
She asked, posing for him.
Very much, he said.
Good, she said, pressing against him, kissing him again.
That's for noticing. Sometimes you're too busy thinking to notice what you should.
He said.
Let me ask you again. How can you suspect Dana?
Maddox released Meta, taking several steps toward the target. He paused, and it seemed he might draw and fire again. Instead, his shoulders relaxed, and he faced his ruined colony woman. Do you remember how Dana hypnotized you last voyage?
Of course, Meta said. She helped me remember what happened to the Star Cruiser in Wolf Prime orbit. Strand used a machine on my mind.
Meta's eyes widened.
Do you think someone has tampered with Dana's mind?
That would be the easiest explanation to the missile assault. In particular, how they knew where we were.
You're suggesting Dana is a traitor?
Not intentionally, Maddox said. Still, I've come to believe it would be extremely difficult to target Victory with weapons firing portals. And this beam that asks a question in order to thought loop Galleon, I cannot accept it. Instead, I think we have a similar situation as last voyage, except this time it is the Doctor who may have altered the AI. I also find no concrete evidence to conclude the Builders are entirely peaceful. If there are any thought loops, they appear to be in the Doctor's mind.
If you're right, Meta said, that would explain why she hasn't acted normally to me.
Maddox nodded.
What do we do?
Precisely nothing,
Dana said. The Doctor stepped into the chamber with a laser pistol aimed at Maddox. Meta whirled around.
Dana, don't! Don't shoot the captain!
I have no intention of shooting him, provided he cooperates,
Dana said, her gaze locked onto Maddox.
Move with extreme slowness, Captain, and unbuckle your gun belt. Meta's life depends on it.
What?
Meta asked.
You'd shoot me?
Only as a last resort, Dana said.
But we're friends, Meta said. Don't you remember Loki Prime?
Shut up,
Dana said. The third shock at the base of Maddox's skull must have struck a thought loose. The captain believed he understood what was going on. It was simple, direct, and oh so obvious now. Yes, it meant he must act at once.
I am ice,
Maddox said. Meta stared at him in surprise and then understanding.
No, Maddox, she shouted. Don't do it.
Dana glanced at Meta. Maddox drew his pistol with lightning speed. He fired three times, each slug shattering Dana's face. That proved it was not actually Dana, but an android. The thing had amazing reflexes of its own. The laser pistol beamed, shooting an intense ray that burned between the captain's left pectoral and shoulder. Horrible agony struck Maddox. His gun clattered onto the deck. He staggered backward as waves of pain slammed home, threatening to make him vomit and fall unconscious. He hung on, though, having to know if he'd put it down. The Dana android's ruined face showered blue sparks. Bits of metal and bloody pseudo-flesh rained onto the floor as the creature staggered backward.
This must be a different kind of android than the ones in the Lin Ru Hotel, which hadn't bled when shot. This time, Maddox had loaded his gun with special high-powered bullets. He hadn't wanted to continue aiming for an android's eye to stop it, as had happened in Shanghai. The android's laser pistol hand had lowered. Now it jerked up and swayed leftward. A second beam burned through the room. It came uncomfortably near the captain. The agony grew in his body with waves of pain. His eyelids fluttered. I refuse to fall unconscious. But he couldn't bend down for his gun, no matter how hard he willed it. His body simply wouldn't obey those signals from his brain. In time's stop frames of sight, Maddox watched Meta. His ruined colony woman tackled the android so they slid across the floor. As they slowed, the thing attempted to club Meta with the butt of its laser pistol. Maddox recalled the strength of the Shanghai androids. Meta grappled with the hand, trying to hold it. The creature wrenched its captured arm, almost ripping it free. With a martial arts shout, Meta bent the android's gun hand back so sharply that something broke in it.
Meta!
The android said as the laser clattered across the floor. With a second shout, Meta slammed an elbow against the android's ruined face. The back of the head struck the deck. At that point, Maddox sank to his knees. The shock of laser burn was overcoming his will. It would seem there was only so much a man, even a hybrid, could do against such shock.
You must,
the android said. Meta struck again, so more pieces flew off the face.
Wait, the android said. Allow me to...
The creature never finished its words. Meta grabbed its broken head and twisted savagely, snapping a connection, no doubt, causing metal to screech. At that point, a new voice, devoid of humanity, spoke out of the android.
Detonation in 5 seconds, it said.
That's all Maddox heard. Then he slumped forward, unconscious. Chapter 23. At first, Maddox heard voices. They were indistinct, droning voices, as annoying as flies. He didn't try to understand them. It was enough. What was enough? He faded out and came back some time later. Memories began to return in bits and pieces. He recalled a shattered face, sparks, pain. Oh, yes, terrible pain. That. Everything faded once more as he fell asleep again. Later, the droning voices returned. They sounded far away. Each had its own note, though. That was different from last time. He attempted to concentrate, but that made his brain throb.
Let him rest.
Maddox heard that. A woman spoke it. She seemed familiar, and it haunted him because he thought she was dead?
Meta?
He croaked.
I'm here,
said a voice very near his ear. He could feel soft hands stroking his arm. He liked that.
His?
That's all he heard before fading away yet again. The next time Maddox came to, he opened his eyes. It took him several seconds before he realized he lay in the infirmary on a cot. Bandages swathed the left side of his torso and shoulder. He felt so weak, so helpless. It was a terrible sensation. I have to get up. The thought burned in him. If he was weak, the others might find him like this. They would not hesitate to kill him, ending his quest to find... Maddox took a shuddering breath, knowing it would likely be painful. Yes, he felt a twinge in his shoulder. He realized he was under the influence of powerful drugs. The captain turned his head, which remained on the pillow the entire time. A person slept in the chair beside his cot. She was beautiful beyond conception. She... Meta, he said, although it came out as a whisper. Nonetheless, her eyes opened. Their gazes met and a lazy smile spread across her gorgeous features. He liked that. A second later, Meta bolted upright.
Maddox!
She shouted.
His smile grew until it felt as if it would tear off his face. She stood beside him, stroking his good arm.
"You worried us, love," she said.
"What?" He wet his lips with a numb tongue.
"What happened? I thought I... something about a detonation."
"You did," Meta said. "But don't worry about that now."
"How can you be alive? How can I be alive?"
Maddox frowned. He wondered if Galleon had remained under Dana's control, under the control of the android posing as Dana. If so, this might be another android, but posing as Meta.
"Don't worry, love," Meta said. "You're going to be all right now. Galleon had an advanced..."
"Are you real?"
he asked, interrupting her. Meta frowned with worry.
"Are you an android?" he demanded.
"No, it's me. Meta, don't you recognize me?"
"The drugs are altering his thoughts," Galleon said, who appeared beside Meta. That's when Maddox realized this was a conspiracy. They had drugged him. Meta was dead. The android had detonated, and Galleon must no doubt be performing according to the android's codes. How had he ever been so foolish as to let an android into Galleon's AI core? After all this time, an android had